So tonight's topic is called the Shabbos Hallel Revisited. The reason why it's called Revisited, because I don't know whether you remember, I gave this year about Shabbos Hallel about 7 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
What?
We didn't do that.
So something like that. So I figured I can't say we're doing it the first time because revisiting it, but since it's been a while, I think it's worthwhile to look at it again. So we're talking about making salads and Shabbos. We'll use that as a vehicle to talk about some other points also. But basically, there are three malachas that we're concerned about. We're talking about making a salad and Shabbos. We have to be concerned about the malachas of borer. There are potential borer issues with making a salad on Shabbos. Borer could come up in the issue of peeling. The peeling something that goes under the rubric of the rules of borer. There's going to be separating salad. You have leaves of lettuce, the good leaves and the bad leaves, fruits, good vegetables, good ones from the bad ones. So you have potential borer issues. We have tochen issues. Dicing your vegetables, putting them into the salad. You also have the malach of kovesh. Kovesh goes under the rubric of maleach or ma'abed, salting, marinating. The Chazal prohibited certain types of process of salting because it parallels the process of preserving something, pickling something. And that was found in the Mishkan, that the tanning process, which you do on a hide, the purpose of a tanning process is, if you don't tan a hide, all the liquor which is in it will eventually cause it to start to decay and to rot. You take out the water and leave just some of the natural oils, but take out the water through the process of tanning it so that it will not rot. So that process of taking out water to preserve something is done through salt many times. So therefore, there are limitations of how you're allowed to salt something. You also theoretically could have skeeta issues if you're squeezing a lemon juice, those type of possibilities. So there are probably four different malachas we need to look at when we're talking about making a salad on Shabbos. So we know for borer to be permitted on Shabbos, that there is three conditions for borer to be permitted on Shabbos. One is that it has to be done good from bad. Number two, it has to be done for immediate use. And number three, it has to be done by hand. Can't be done with a utensil which is made for the purpose of processing a burger situation. The rule of good from bad has an exception. An exception is peeling. Right? That when you peel, you take off the peel, you're taking the bad from the good. But it's permitted because the logic behind, we spoke about this when we spoke about the malach of burger we gave to Shurma Burger, I think it was last year or 2 years ago. That the logic behind this heter of these three things is Chazal differentiated between borer, which is done as part of the process of eating, derech achila, it's part of the eating process, and borer, which is done is to prepare something to be put it away to use it at a later date, at later moments. So if it's part of the eating process, it's permitted. So normally, eating process, you take what you want, you take the good from the bad, with your hand for immediate use. That's the definition of an eating process. So that's where we get these three criteria. But when it comes to peeling something, the normal part of it, when you want to peel something, it's very hard to take the good from the bad because there's a peel on it. So over there, the normal process of the derech achila would be to remove the peel and then eat the item. So in this situation, the requirement of good from bad is dropped, but the other two remain. So the other two remain, which means you cannot use a utensil which is designated for this purpose. You cannot use a peeler for that purpose. So how do you do it? You do it with a knife. Now, is a knife considered? A knife is considered not simply made for that purpose. So a knife is considered like theoretically I could dig it off with my fingernails. The knife is just helping me do it in a better way. But really, we understand it to be really an extension of the hand. Now, we mentioned when we learned the malacha of barer, that Borer assumes a mixture. If there's no mixture, there's no Borer. You can't discuss the whole Yisrael of Borer is separating two items out from the mixture. So now, if it's all the same item, you can't discuss Borer. There's no Borer if it's all the same item. So, do I look at the peel as being something different than the fruit which is inside of it? So, if I look at the peel as a peel and the flesh of the vegetable inside or the fruit inside is another item. So that there's two items, two different items, and they're definitely mixed together. They're bound together. But if I look at it as all one item, so then you can't discuss the possibility of Borer. So how do we define whether it's considered one item or not? So the answer is, if we're dealing with a vegetable or a fruit, which the derech is of the vast majority of people is to eat it without removing the peel, that's all one item. So if a person wants to peel tomatoes, and you could peel tomatoes, but the average person doesn't peel tomatoes, so peeling tomatoes is not called borer. Since it's not called borer, there's no requirement of doing it samach lasuda. I can cut a tomato in half and 3 hours before the suda also, because I'm not doing borer, I'm cutting tomato in half. I'm putting this half of the tomato on this side, this half of the tomato on this side. That's okay. So taking off a peel of a tomato is the same thing as cutting a tomato in half. So there's no requirement of doing it samach lasuda. So if, however, it's something which you could eat, but many people do remove it, so that's a different story already. So peeling an apple, now you can eat an apple peel. You can, that's not a problem. You could eat an apple peel. It's not something which is not edible. On the other hand, many people do remove the peel of an apple, cucumber peel. It goes both ways. So when they're in the situation, the Mishnah Berurah passes that it would be considered borer meat or abona. It is edible, and really you could make it one item. So you can't call it two truly distinct items, mita raisa, but mita rabbana is going to be aser. For our purposes, there's no difference between whether it's the rabbana or the raisa. And if it's the type of peel which very rarely is eaten by people, usually it's removed. So then already it's considered barer mita raisa. And the difference, again, the difference at the point over here is, if it's not borer at all, there's no requirement doing it samach lasuda, but doing it immediately before the meal.
Excuse me, a banana?
Banana is definitely is two items, it's two parts, one's edible, one's not edible, so over there you would require, they have to do it right before usage. You can peel it. The requirement of doing good from bad is removed, because that's the only way you can do your banana. Right. But on the other hand, it has to be done
immediately before.
Even when we were pointing out that going back to the tomato situation, theoretically, if you want to do tomato with a peeler, it's not a problem either, because it's not borer. But I mean, okay, I don't know how relevant the question is or not, but that would be come out like that. Another example of this would be leaves of lettuce. So many times you might have a head of lettuce, so the outer leaves have started to wither, and they're not so tasty, etc. So you want to pull those off. So that's a form of peeling. So it goes under this heter of peeling, that you ought to take the bad from the good in that situation. So that's a normal. Now, if you cut if you already cut it in such a way you could take the good from the bad, it's easily accessible. So that's not the derech, right? But in a scenario where I have a head of lettuce and I want to pull out those outer leaves because I'm not going to use them, so if they're totally not edible, that'd be borer deraisa. Like they're really, you know, totally forget it, they're gone. If they're somewhat edible, but I prefer to remove them, so that'd be borer derabanan. So either way, I need to do it samach lasuda. I have to do it within the correct time frame called samach lasuda. So what is called samach lasuda? How close to the suda is called samach lasuda? So we spoke about the borer. We spoke about this issue. Again, the logic behind the heter of samach lasuda. This is all part of the idea we call derech achil. It's the way you eat something. So the way you eat something is you take it. You might clean it off, etc., and you put it in your mouth. So you do what you have to do, and then you put it in your mouth. So you, again, the normal way is to take the good from the bad with your hand to put it into your mouth. So it has to be basically immediately prior before you're planning to eat. So that came along a chiddush and says, well, you know, sometimes if there's a lot of people there, I'm facilitating everybody else's derech achilu. So that's also permitted. So it might take me, for just be sitting down to a snack for myself, so it would take me 1 minute to prepare myself and eat it. If I'm sitting down to a suda with many people, it's going to take longer. So as long as it takes me to get that meal going, that's permitted. But let's say, however, I would love to chop around and go to shul in the morning. So I can say, you know, I'll get up early, make the salad, do everything I have to do, and then I'll run off to shul for chop the end of shul. So it's not samach l'suda anymore. The whole point was to have it ready, put away, to pull it out when I need it. That's exactly what that's called barer la'otzer. Barer la'otzer means you're burning it not as part of your eating process, but part of your getting preparing it to have it ready when you need it. So that's not a called samach l'suda. Once you're within your time frame of the meal, so how do you look at you might have three or four or five different courses. I have a salad at the beginning, I might have a fruit salad at the end. Right? So can I prepare my fruit salad at the end before the meal? The answer is yes. Because this is all part of, once this is what we're sitting down for the meal, the meal might take me an hour or 2 hours. I might need to start preparing an hour beforehand. But this is all part of the process of now we're in the meal mode. This is all part of the meal, even though it's the last course of the meal. Yes.
I remember being told that even if you were, so you don't go to shul because you have people coming by for lunch, it wouldn't be okay to work on it, do your davening at home.
Same thing. Same thing. We're correct. The point being, anytime where you're trying to finish it and have time for something else, as opposed to going straight into the meal, is going to be problematic. Yes.
If you do the preparation and then like set the table, is that all considered part of the meal preparation?
The assumption or luck is yes, that's all part of the meal preparation. So I can do the salad and then the table, or the table and the salad. Many times the table also has butter issues when you're setting your table. You know, depending on how you put your ace of the night before, you might have a butter issue on your silverware. So you need to send the same heter of samach l'suda for setting the table many times. Okay. Another area where you're going to have barer dealing with making a salad, potentially you can have barer, that we can talk about the issue of barer, is washing things off. So how do we look at washing something off? So washing something off, theoretically, I think when we learned the barer here, I remember I got some raised eyebrows when we spoke about washing things off. Right? So there's a case in the Gemara, and the Gemara says a person has a vegetable, together, mixed in with some pieces of dirt, etc. And he says, you know what? The nature of the way these things work is that these are pretty buoyant types of vegetables, and I'll put them in the water, and they'll float to the top, and the dirt will float to the bottom. Some more says, that's barer deraisa. I used water to be barer. I used water to separate between the dirt and the vegetable. Okay, so how do I look at dirt on my vegetable? That's a case where there was dirt and a vegetable. So there were clearly two different things. Right? How do I look at dirt on my vegetable? So again, if it's something which most people really don't mind that it's there. So many people wash, they tell you you have to wash your I don't see anything on my fruit, but you're supposed to wash it because there's these pesticides and all these different chemicals and all these different wonderful things on my fruit. So I have to wash my fruit or my vegetable before I eat it. Right? But the truth is, I'm not so machban on it. It doesn't really bother me. Most people, I don't know whether they are or they aren't. They can't tell you if you do a poll in the United States of America at the end of the day. I think probably might depend on region, but a lot of America probably eats it without washing it necessarily. Okay, so that's not burning. So you can do it whenever you want. You want to do it 4 hours beforehand? No, not a problem. If a person comes up to a situation, I'm missing a page. Yes.
So, dirt and vegetables, I'm thinking of mushrooms. That would be a clear example, right? Because when you get the mushrooms, there'd be black things on it that you definitely would want to get off before you serve it or eat it. So that wouldn't work on Shabbos.
Correct. So actually, over there, the problem is even samach l'suda might be questionable because, according to one opinion, what it is, it's using the water to separate. So it's like using a kli. So even if you do it samach l'suda, it's problematic. It doesn't right.
Okay,
you can pick up the mushroom, take the mushroom, the good from the bad, run it under water, the Marsha holds, at that point in time, so that you're holding it, and that you, so that, but you should do it Salma Fasuda. I'm missing some pages. I do it then. Okay. I have a chazaka now of forgetting to bring my to my pages every time I say a shir. Okay. Fine. I do want to point out, actually, just it hit me right now, that there's potentially another malacha which comes up. We had this discussion recently. And so there's a malacha called dosh. So what is the malacha of dosh? Malacha of dosh is translated as threshing. Threshing is that something grows, and it grows, the way it grows is there's the stalk, whatever it is, which supports it, and it stands on. And then there's the kernel, or there's the fruit, etc., which I'm going to eat. The malacha of cutting it off from its source of sustenance, from the ground or from the tree, is the malacha of kotzer. There's still some stalk attached to it. So the act of threshing is that you break the kernel off of the stalk. Right. So the malacha of dosh also includes, if you have a vine, and I have the vegetables on the vine, that's also a form of an act of dosh. You're taking the item, breaking it off the stalk. So why am I allowed to sit there with my bunch of grapes and pick grapes off of the bunch? Right? Why don't we say the same thing? And the answer is because the derech was to keep it off, to keep it on there, to bring it to the, to facilitate bringing it to the table, and that's how you eat it. So again, it becomes, that's a derech achila. That's not the thing which you leave back in the field. However, this is where the question comes up. Tomatoes on a vine, the vast majority of tomatoes come to your grocery store not on a vine, which means that the vine you're supposed to leave behind. Mm-hmm. So now there's a fancy store that comes along, and we're going to give you a tomato on the vine. So I come home with this tomato on the vine, I sit there on Shabbos, I pull a tomato off of the vine. I'm very concerned that might be malacha deraisa of dosh. So I was speaking to somebody else. He said, well, maybe nowadays it's common enough that now that's like the grapes. I said, I'm not convinced. So you're dealing with a questionable issue of an issue of deraisa, of doing the malacha of dosh, of taking something off of its what it grows on. So I would suggest that a person, if he wants to do that, they should not use it for Shabbos or Yom Tov. So it sort of takes out the whole time of having it, right? Cause okay.
If you had that, would you be allowed to cut a little bit of the vegetable and leave like a little bit of the tomato on the vine? Would that be any different?
No. It's not like burger. You leave some behind, it becomes mutter.
But there's a vegetable called a fennel, and you eat basically the root, and the stalks you don't use.
Okay.
So it would be best to get rid of the stalks before Shabbos.
Right.
So that you can just...
Right. Now, there's something called, it's called edamame. Okay. So what's the status of edamame? So here we go. So excuse me for my ignorance. You know, you'll have to help me with this. Okay. So what's with the string beans, right? So what's with taking peas out of a pot? So before edamame came along, right, you know, like before we started eating raw fish and pods and all the different things, in other words, you know, but, you know, once upon a time, right, you took your peas out beforehand, right? So string beans, you eat the whole pod, even though there's little beans inside, but the point is that the whole thing is edible. So that's not the stalk and the that's all the food. Peas in the pod, you eat the peas, you don't eat the pod. So taking peas out of the pod is, again, the same loch of dosh. There were certain nuts which would have two shells. They would have an outer shell and then the inner shell, which is what we usually get in the store. So the halacha says the outer nut, which is usually removed before it's brought to the store, again would be a dosh type of situation. So the pod of the peas would be a problem. Now, when you bring it now to your table, if you're not going to be eating the pod, so it's very fancy, etc., but you have the malach of dosh when you pull out the pea from the pot, or the bean from the pot. So I think it's going to be problematic. I'll take away all the fun. Okay. On tomatoes, so you have that little green leaf on top. So that doesn't have a heter of peeling, because that, you know, the peel is something which really basically prevents me from using the item until I take the peel off. That's derech achila. Pulling off that piece is, there's a part that I don't want, there's a part that I want, and that's not really edible. So that would be a burrer situation. So you really should, if you want to, you should try and remove those leafy things from before Shabbos, or just cut it off with the leafy thing on top and just leave a little piece, leave a little bit left, and that will be that would not be a problem. I'm good. Yeah. No, I see somebody's shaking their head.
I'm confused because pods are edible.
If pods are edible and we eat them, so then it's mutter. Most people discard the pods and don't eat the pods, right?
So but still, the pods are edible, to remove the peel from the pod would still be considered dosh. If that's what my kids like to do, see
if you're not eating the
pod. If you're not going to use in the pod, mm-hmm. because your kids don't eat the pod.
The cow hen who has the most peas.
Okay.
But if they eat the pod after, does that make a difference?
If they eat the pod, so then it's mutter.
Then it's not.
It's too edible. This is the whole edible thing. Okay. There's a malach of tochen. Malach of tochen really carries many different examples of tochen in it. The example which we had in the Mishkan was that that things were pulverized to a dust, grinding something from wheat into flour. According to the Yerushalmi, that was the malach of the Mishkan. Was they would make the menachos, they would take the wheat, grind it into flour, so that your mamash is making the very very fine particles. However, we do not limit the malach of teichen to fine particles. So even we're making them even larger particles, it's still going to be prohibited. It's on its way to the getting it down to the final level. That's also part of the malacha of teichen. Many times, just certain things, you only grind them to coarsely. So taking something and making it into small pieces is also goes into the malacha of teichen. So what's that relevant for us is, a person wants to start dicing up a vegetable, do we have a problem of teichen or not? So the Rashba comes along, and the Rashba says, one of the Rishonim comes along and he says, and the Ramah passes like this, the Minhag Ashkenazim is like this, that the same way there is a leniency by Borer of Samach Lasuda, so by Teichen also, there's a leniency of Samach Lasuda. So if you do it right before the meal, it's going to be permitted. However, the same way by Borer, we say you cannot use an instrument which is specifically made for that purpose. I can't use a sifter, a sieve, etc. for that purpose. So I can't use a grinding mill, or a chopper, a grater, for the purpose of doing my teichen in small pieces, even samach lasuda. The same way we said by borer, using a knife is considered an extension of your hand that's going to be permitted. So similarly, by teichen, using a knife is going to be permitted. So theoretically, if I do my teichen, because again, part of the achila process is I grind something up into small pieces, either in my mouth or out of my mouth, but the achila is I need to make it into small pieces to eat it. That's called part of your achila process, and that's going to be permitted. So theoretically, as long as you do it right before the meal, even if you cut into very small pieces, it's going to be permitted. However, the Mishabura suggests that since there are many Rishonim who disagree with this opinion, and say, excuse me, the Gemara never mentions anywhere this heter that you're talking about. The Gemara talks about it in regards to Borer, and there's a whole discussion in the Gemara that this heter of Samach Lasuda allows and permits Borer. The Gemara never mentions this at all in regards to Teichen. So how can one of the Rishonim come up and say this? So many Rishonim disagree with this and say that this is not true. Therefore, the Mishabura suggests, we should make the pieces not so small. Therefore, even if you say that this permission is not true, you didn't really do teichen anyway because they weren't so small. Now, of course, the biggest problem, so he says you should do chatichas gedolos ktsas, somewhat larger than, and that blank is never filled in.
Yeah.
Right? Right? It's like, you know, when I asked my Rebbe years ago, I remember I asked him, can you define a teruvis? How do you define by Borer definition of what's called a mixture? Right, so if I have a few, burr applies to any type of item, so it's called burr if it's a mixture. What's called a mixture? So my Rebbe said, if it looks like a tarovis, it's a tarovis. If it doesn't look like a tarovis, it's not a tarovis. I said, Rebbe, thank you. Right? So if it looks like it, because the other says, anyway, it doesn't help. Okay. How large is it? So it should be, so the answer is what larger than you normally do. Mm-hmm. The problem is, so that also becomes somewhat personalized. Mm-hmm. So you have these women, and they make their pieces like microscopic, right? You know, 57 times over. And then you have the women, which do like, you know, 3 or 4 times, and they're not so small, you know? So the answer is what's called average. And I know I have no idea what average is. So that being said, so chetichos gedolos k'sas, my wife made a sale of the Shabbos, and she made her chetichos gedolos k'sas. Said, ah, that's called gedolos k'sas, you know. They were definitely larger than she normally would have made. So that's as best as I can help you with. I have no idea how to give you a number.
But I have a question.
Yes.
If you normally don't dice, do you have a problem on Shabbos? Do you need to make it bigger than you?
If you would normally make it larger than the average woman makes it, so that's mutter. You don't have to change your what you do. What's called the average woman, I don't know.
Then the average dice.
Okay. Then the average dice, right. Okay. Now, there's a third example of teichin, which is slicing thin slices. The Mor says that slicing thin slices also goes under the rubric of teichin. So again, we have the same issue on Shabbos, that you cannot do it with a machine made for that purpose. And it's permitted samach l'suda, but you should do gedolos k'sas, because according to the Mishnah Berurah, we have the same problem. So you should do them a little bit thicker than usual. So if I make my slices of tomato very, very thin, I should make them thicker than usual. And again, we're going to have this question, how much thicker is thicker than usual? And I wish I could help you more, but I don't have a great answer for that to that point. Just while we're on the topic of teichin, so we gave the example of making to find particles. We made something a little bit more coarse, dicing, mincing, chopping, all those words. Then you have slicing, etc. There's also mashing. Mashing also goes under the rubric of the melacha of tochei. So if I take, it's even though theoretically what is, I'm taking this piece, I'm making the really very small particles which are being held together by the liquid which is there. So mashing a banana, mashing an avocado, would be an issue of teichin. So Chazal came along and said a leniency which is quite unique. Normally we know that the rule is if it's something which is prohibited on a Torah level, doing it with a shinoi, doing it in an abnormal fashion, does not make it permitted. It makes it rabbinic, but does not make it permitted. But over here, Chazal came along and said, if you do it with a significant shinoi, it's going to be permitted. So if you have a need, let's say for a child or for a chayla, to mash, in a situation where you have a need, you're allowed to mash with the back of a fork. Not with the normal way, you mash with the tines of the fork. That you can't do. If you use the handle of the fork, so even though it's a shinoi, and theoretically it should be still prohibited midrabanan, since there's a need, the example being for a person who needs to have it, a child or somebody's elderly, etc., needs to have it pureed to some extent, so we're going to have this permission to do that with a shinoi. So that being said, a person wants to cut pieces of avocado into their salad, that's fine. You're cutting pieces, that's not a problem. We shouldn't be getting involved. Shouldn't be involved in any type of mashing situation.
What about eggs?
What about eggs? Eggs
are not good with karka. Does that have a different din?
Oh, regards to teichin?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So something which is cooked, and it's not directly good with karka, does not have a prohibition of teichin. So you can, eggs, meats, those type of things, you can cut them into small pieces. However, there's an interesting question, can I use an egg slicer? Can I use an egg slicer for the purpose of cutting my eggs? Because that's like a machine made for that purpose. So, interestingly enough, Rav Moshe said that's mutter. Egg slices are mutter.
You mash eggs too? That you're saying is
okay? Can you mash eggs? You would do it mashing eggs.
Well, like eggshell.
Right. So cutting into small pieces is more leaning into the halacha because it's considered a secondary level of teichin. Mashing, my mind is blanking right now. I don't want to answer the question because my mind is blanking on that. So I don't want to answer the question because I don't want to say the wrong thing. I'm saying I don't know what's a good answer.
If you cut small pieces, can you mix it with mayonnaise?
Now, okay, that's a fair question, and this now you're getting involved in the malach of losh, which is a complicated question. Let me hold losh. You can pull me back to losh at the end, okay? If I don't get back to it, you can remind me. I'm notorious for forgetting those type of things, so you can remind me. Okay. There is another malacha which we have to be concerned about with the orisa derabanan of salting or marinating. So Chazal came along and said that since there is malacha of ma'abed, which was using these types of chemicals which draw out liquid to preserve an item, so salting, which the power of the salt draws out the liquid and changes the item, it can make it either harder or softer or whatever it might do to it. So we have a limitation of that malacha, of that action. So we have two examples where we're going to have a problem of salting. One example of salting is if I specifically salt this item because I want to change it. I want to salt and let it sit for a little bit and change. Right? So salting and let it sit for a little bit to change this, even it's one piece, it's one little piece of cucumber. I want to salt it; it should dry out and eat it. Like I eat it, like eating my cucumbers dried out a little bit. I want to salt it, let it sit for a few minutes, and come back and eat it. I may not do that. I may not salt a large amount at one time, even if I do not plan to let it sit for a period of time and to change. I just want to give it the flavor of salting. But since it is types of items which salting would and could affect them, therefore you may not do that even if it's not my intent. So now I want to salt my salad. What do I do? So there is a heter, which Chazal said, if you add a liquid which breaks the power of the salt, then it's permitted. So if you add oil to your salad before you add the salt, or you add vinegar to the salad before you add your salt, so even when you salt it afterwards, it's not going to have the same effect because there's a liquid there which is going to prevent it to affect it. It's permitted to salt the salad. If a person has on their plate and they want to salt an item which is not normally preserved, not normally pickled. So you might pickle little tomatoes. You don't pickle tomato slices. Right? I've never seen pickled tomatoes. Maybe now they have pickled tomato slices. I've seen pickled tomatoes. I haven't seen pickled tomato slices. So you already have some slices on the table of tomato slices. Right? So I want to salt them. I can salt them because that's not something which we normally do, the process of preserving them by salting. If I have tomatoes, I have cherry tomatoes sitting there, I can't do that without having added something beforehand. Halacha says if you do not add something beforehand and you salt it, you should add something immediately afterwards. Also is sufficient. Let's say you have a type of an item that the way you preserve it is with vinegar. So we said one of the liquids you can add to break the power of the salt is vinegar. So that sounds very strange. Well, vinegar is how you preserve it. So that is also brought down. If you're dealing with a type of an item, that the way you preserve it is with vinegar, you shouldn't be using vinegar to solve your problem. Use oil would be a good idea. Vinegar would not be a good idea in that situation. Something with the derech is to use it for that purpose. Salting something which is cooked meats, fish, eggs, etc., that derech wasn't at that point in time to salt them in order to preserve them. So you are allowed to salt them for the purpose. You're allowed to salt them with it, even though you're salting multiple amounts of them. I want to go back to talking about adding liquids. So I want to add lemon juice to my salad. So I want to squeeze out from my lemon juice. So squeezing out from a lemon juice, we know that there's a halacha of schita of squeezing. Squeezing directly onto a food is permitted. So I can take my lemon and squeeze it directly into the salad. It's going directly into the salad. It's permitted. The one exception to that would that we say squeezing directly into the salad is permitted, and that doesn't apply to olives and to grapes. So, for whatever reason, you have a recipe which has squeezed grape juice into your salad directly and use that heter. We don't do that heter for squeezing directly. It's preferred to be machmer not to do that heter of squeezing directly for grapes or olives into food.
I'm sorry, are you squeezing the olives and grapes, or are you squeezing the lemon juice on the olives or grapes?
No, I'm talking about you can't squeeze a grape into a salad or squeeze an olive into a salad. You can squeeze a lemon into your salad. Okay. That wasn't clear. I'm sorry. Not that
you can squeeze a lemon.
What?
You can squeeze a grape.
Lemon
can. Grape, grapes and olives. The reason why grapes and olives are different is because the Torah defines the liquid of grapes and olives as being very significant. The liquid of grapes is called wine. The liquid of olives is called is Shaman's eyes of the Torah. So they have a different status. They're called liquids. The Torah recognizes as separate liquids, distinct from the fruits. Whereas all of the liquids, the liquid which comes out is not really considered a distinct liquid in halacha, so it's going directly to another food. It doesn't get a status of being a liquid. It's called food to food. And the fact that it was a drop of liquid for a few seconds in the air doesn't make any difference. Elisa?
I mean, I wasn't going to ask this question, but oranges is the same as lemon or lime?
Orange is the same as lemons and limes. Orange is grapefruits. It's normal to squeeze, but they're not grapes or olives.
I was really going to ask is if you're squeezing that lemon and the seed goes into your salad, and you let it remove the seed.
So if you're squeezing your lemon and the seed goes into the salad, normally you're going to have a problem with borer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I would suggest you would be permitted to take out some of the salad together with the lemon pit, and that's fine. The lemon pips, I think they're officially called, right? But that's fine. That would be permitted to do.
Excuse me, can you squeeze a lemon into tea?
You cannot squeeze a lemon into a liquid.
Exactly.
But you can squeeze it into a salad.
Ah, okay.
Okay, so you can squeeze a lemon onto fish. You can squeeze a lemon into a salad. You cannot squeeze a lemon into a liquid. So you can't squeeze it into tea.
Into a liquid you can't.
You cannot. Squeezing the lemon onto sugar and then putting the sugar into the tea is a machlokes between the Mishabura and the Chazon Ish. The Mishabura permits that. Chazon Ish prohibits that. So there's what to rely on to permit it.
I guess it would be a sugar cube.
You have a spoon of sugar, teaspoon of sugar. You have a teaspoon of sugar. You squeeze the lemon on the port, and so Shabur said that's permitted.
But the salad has liquid in it, and then I can squeeze the lemon into it.
No, I'm squeezing onto the salad. So basically, I'm squeezing onto the salad. Now, if I would squeeze a lot of lemon, there's clearly like lemon juice running off to the side. I don't know, but that's not the normal case. Okay. Excuse me one second. I forgot to bring two of my pages, so I'm trying to recall what I wanted to say. So, in that scenario, squeezing. The tea, you mentioned the tea. Putting a slice of lemon into the tea, putting a slice of lemon into a liquid is permitted. You can't squeeze it, you could put it in. You have to worry about bishul, though.
Yeah.
Oh. You have hot tea. The slice of lemon is raw, so if your tea is a cliche, you should not be putting a slice of lemon into it. If your tea is a cliche, so then you have what to rely on to put your slice of lemon in.
Is it possible to squeeze the lemon juice into a spoon and lower your spoon into the tea?
An empty spoon or a spoon that has sugar in it?
Empty.
Also prohibited, right?
Is there any time on Shabbos when your tea would be a
cliche? Is there any time on Shabbos when your tea would be a cliche? There could be a situation where the Mishabura actually suggests that the best way, the Mishabura says the best way he suggests to make tea on Shabbos is before Shabbos to make tea essence,
mm-hmm.
remove the tea leaves, etc., keep it in a hot place, mm-hmm. so it's still warm.
Yatsula.
It is still warm, so then in that situation you're allowed to put into the cup and pour directly on it because it's still mavushal. It hasn't cooled off.
Okay.
He suggests, like, you know, if you had a blech, in the middle, if you had a blech, I think my mother-in-law used to have this, used to have the little tea pot, you know, with the essence on it, also on the blech. Oh. Mm-hmm. So you had hot essence. The reason why that's preferred, he sees that's preferred, is because it's been fully cooked before Shabbos, so no bishul on it anymore. It's better to have, is pouring the essence into the tea, you're coloring it. Oh. There's a malach of tzaveya. So we pass on there's no tzaveya by Eichlin, but there's one opinion that says there is. So he says if you can be machmer and put the essence in first, it would be better. So how do you do that? He says if it's still hot, that would be the solution. That's how he suggests to do it. So there is possible to have a cliche. Yes.
So you put the essence in first, and then
if it's still hot. But that's very rare. But nowadays, I don't know, most people don't have essence which is still hot.
How do you put essence back on the black?
I guess I don't know exactly. You know, I grew up, you know, with my mother-in-law's house. There's a big tea kettle on the blech, full of hot water. You take it off and pour it off. You put it back down, right? That's you didn't let go of it. You had intention to return it, and it was still hot, right? And the fire was covered, so you had all it was, and it was fully cooked beforehand. So you had all of your five conditions to return it back. So you could have the same thing with the tea essence also. So it is possible again, but you know, if you want to add, if you're it's a klishlishi, you want to add a slice of lemon, you can do that. You can't squeeze it, you can do that. Yes.
So it's okay to make tea with klishlishi. I know people that only will drink tea if you make the essence ahead of time.
I didn't say that.
I know this isn't exactly the same territory that we're in, but
I'm just... Ramosh, that's how you're allowed to use a teabag and a klishli sheet. There are many people which, you know, we're not around that, so... So... Can ask your LOR what he says. Right? I said, I'm local, I'm Orthodox, and I'm a rabbi, but I'm not your L-O-R necessarily. Okay. Okay. There is, just talking about, going back to the malacha of Tochen, there is a heter between Tochen and Tochen. So if it's been ground ready once, it doesn't become, you're allowed to grind it a second time. That applies if when it goes back to its state, the second grinding, it's not going to revert back to the way it was totally in the beginning. So I make matzah. I bake matzahs before Shabbos. Right? So matzahs were flour. They were ground. Now I want to take my matzah and crumble it. And, you know, or I want to take a piece of hard bread and crumble it into my salad, make, you know, croutons, such a type of thing. So that's going to be mutter. There's no limitation of how large you have to make them, because ain't teichen achar teichen. It's been ground already. And even after you grind it back again, it doesn't become flour again. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go back to the same state. Let's say, changing the scenario totally, a totally different example of teichen. So I get mud on my garments, and the mud dries, and now it's dirt. So it's one mass. If I crumble it off, I'm breaking it to small pieces. So that's called teichen. Well, it was already small pieces once upon a time, but it doesn't. That has been totally lost through the process. It looks exactly the way it started before, and nothing has changed. It's back to its original state. So when I break it back, I would have a problem of teichen, even though it's been nitkan beforehand. So crumbling off, we pass, and crumbling off mud is called the malach of teichen, and it's also to do that. Another example of that, where you theoretically would have this issue, would be dried food. Right, so in dried food, if it's been something which had been ground beforehand, so I would be allowed to crumble it off. If something which had not been ground beforehand, I got some cholent on my jacket, so you have a malach of malab, and I can't clean my jacket on Shabbos, so I can take off the outer layer, as long as I leave some, I can't make it totally clean. But besides that, I have to be concerned about if it's dried already and it's a little crumbly, I'm crumbling into little pieces, I might have a lach of tochen that I'm grinding into small pieces. So that's an interesting example of tochen, which people aren't so aware. I just want to touch on the malaban issue. I just had this last Shabbos. If you have dust on your garment, brushing it off is the malach of malaban. If you're cleaning something. So we pass... we pass in which at first glance seems to be counterintuitive, but it makes a lot of sense. The more you care about the appearance of the garments, the more usher it is. In other words, if I have this dark black jacket and I have this dust on it, it really looks, it sticks out bad, so I can't go like this. I can't do that. According to Rashi, I did a malacha deraisa, and it's the deraisa of being malaben on Shabbos. So I saw a boy, he takes his hat, and there's something on his hat. So he starts rubbing it off with his jacket. That's an issur deraisa, according to Rashi. Because you care about how your hat looks. Now, my hat is 7.5 years old, and somebody asked me, you wear a brown hat? Right? Right? I really, you know, there's so much dust, it's part of the being of the hat. You take the dust out, the hat will fall apart. So at that point in time, I'm not really doing anything, I'm not really cleaning it. So we mutter. For me, because the more I don't care about, the more mutter it is. Of course, I'm not going to do it anyway because I don't care, right? But right. So practically, you have this issue. You have to be aware of this, you know. So it was it's the middle of Maariv, Friday night. And I'm going like this, trying to get the boy's attention. You know, he looks at me like, okay, you know, like why, you know, right, you know. It's something you have to be aware of. So it's generally more of a common issue when you have, let's say, a darker type of a garment than you have a lighter type of a garment, but that it does apply. Yes?
A lint, like little threads or something, and you have to just take the threads off.
Something which is totally on the surface, it hasn't become embedded or connected in, is permitted to take off. The case of the halacha gave an example of feathers. I guess that was more common. You had the little feathers from your down, whatever it was. That was the common case that they gave. That is permitted. Okay, I think I've covered what I wanted to cover. We'll take questions. Yes.
The mud thing, if it's like just kind of the derech walking, like if kids get it stuck in their shoes and they're walking in as they walk, it comes off and comes.
Yeah. So there's no that's not a secretion. It's not a kavana, but you have to be, you know. If they're trying to rub their shoes off to get it off, so leather is a little bit better. The shoe is a little better. It's not a canvas shoe. It's not a cloth shoe. It's a leather shoe. It doesn't get embedded. So over there you don't have a problem. That's more like the other case. However, you have to be careful with that. You can't scrape it because scraping can affect the leather. So scraping affect the leather will be considered mamachik.
You walk into the house and you know your shoes are muddy, you
can't go. So, actually, the case, it's interesting. The case in Halacha says you walk in the house and your shoes are muddy, you can't rub them off because you're adding on to the floor because they had dirt floors. That was an example which Brooks brings down in Halacha, which, you know, we're beyond that. I think most of us, Baruch Hashem, have, you know, some type of a flooring in our house that's no longer relevant. So, the bottom of the shoe is usually not a problem. But if you can actually scrape it, you know, a person wants to take a knife and start scraping it. Or they had a sharp object, which they used to have. Mishaburth, the Ramah mentioned they used to have a outside of the shul like an iron.
Yeah.
Boot scrapers, right? So he said you can't use them on Shabbos, right? Because that's that you're scraping onto the leather. That's a problem, right? But just to rub it off at the bottom is not a problem.
If it's mud and versus cake, then it's
going to
make it better. If it's
wet, it's better, right? The problem if it's dry, you have a problem with toichin. Yes.
Is there any way to make guacamole on Shabbos?
Excuse me for my ignorance. How do you make guacamole?
You mentioned an avocado.
Guacamole on Shabbos.
Oh.
That's all you do?
Add lemon juice or some
kind of mayonnaise. Oh, egg salad. Okay, with the losh issue. Okay, so here we are by losh issue again. So you can't mash it. There's no hesitation to mash it on Shabbos.
Then if you mash it with a fork the other way.
So we normally rely on that in the case where there's a need. So I guess if you have a tremendous need to have guacamole. So, Lisha. So, the malacha of malacha of Lush, I think we spoke about Lush recently. If I recall, sometime in the last 5 years, that's called recent for me. We spoke about the malacha of Lush, and so Lush is an interesting malacha. That there are two steps in the Lisha process in halacha. The first step in the Lisha process is when you put the two put together your solid and your liquid or your semi-liquid, you put them together. That's the first step. So in the classic case, you have flour and you add water. You haven't done anything, you haven't done any act of trying to combine it with your hands, just putting the two together in the bowl. That's already the malacha of Lush. You haven't done anything else. Then the second step is the act of mixing it together, which is also the malacha of lush. Both are true. Lush is permitted if you do it with a shinui. It's also one of the malachas which Chazal permitted with a shinui. Now, there are two. You have to do a shinui in both steps of the stages of the process. So the two stages of the process. The first step is the act of putting the two items together, and the second is the act of doing some type of an action to combine them. Right. So, how do you do a shinui in the first stage of the process? The shinui is you change the order, the normal order. Mm. If you normally put the solid and then the liquid, you put the liquid and then the solid. Right, right. Mm. In regards to the shinui for the second step of the process, so you do it with a crisscross type of a motion as opposed to a circular motion. Normally you stir like this. I'm going to stir like this. I'm going to do crisscross as opposed to circular. Now, here's the problem. There are two levels of mixtures halachically when it comes to lisha. There are thick mixtures and thin mixtures. A thin mixture is lisha derabanan. A thick mixture is lisha deraisa. Okay? A thin mixture is lisha derabanan. A thick mixture is lisha deraisa. The difference is a thin mixture pours, like a batter, and a thick mixture is a dough, it doesn't pour. Okay? So something which is a thicker type of mixture, so you can, you deal with lisha deraisa. Something which is a thinner type of mixture which pours, I'm talking about chocolate milk. I'm talking about, it has a consistency to it, but it pours. Slowly, but it pours. So that's the second type of shinui, which is the crisscross motion versus the circular motion, works for both Elisha de Raisa or Elisha de Rabbana. Okay? The first type of shinui, which is the change in the order, only works for Elisha de Rabbana, only works for thin mixtures. Doesn't work for thick mixtures. Okay? So let me say that again. So when it coming to making the change of the order, if it's a thin mixture, that permits it. If it's a thick mixture, it doesn't permit it. Once it's been, let's say I put the ingredients together in the bowl before Shabbos. Now I'm coming to Shabbos and I want to stir them. So I change and I don't stir, I do a crisscross motion. That'll work whether it's a thick mixture or a thin mixture. Okay? So now, how do you deal with tuna fish, egg salad, when you put the mayonnaise and the tuna in the bowl and nothing happens? Normally, by all of the things, something happens. There's a certain amount of natural connection which is going to happen between the two items. Over here, they just sit. Is that called that you did anything beforehand? Is that called that you need a shinui? I didn't do anything. So, Rav Hatzal held that there is a problem of lisha when it comes to egg salad and tuna salad. And he says that therefore you cannot do the first step of the process on Shabbos. You need to do it before Shabbos. The second step of the process, once it's already started being mixed, you want to mix it some more, you can do it with a shinui of crisscross. But the first step of the process of getting the mixture going, he says you need to do that before Shabbos. Simcha Bonham Cohn, in his Sefer of the Shabbos Kitchen, Article of Publications, whatever year that was, right, quotes from a few of the poskim that say that they want to suggest that tuna, because and mayonnaise, which just sits there and nothing happens, you have no problem of lisha in the first stage of the process. So you can change the order, and that's fine. Even though it's a thick mixture. And then you do the second part of the process with a shinui of crisscross, and it'll be mutter. That's what he suggests. It makes sense to him like that. And he says he asked Rav Scheinberg's etzal, and Rav Scheinberg agreed to that. And he asked Diane Roth, and Diane Roth agreed with that, etc. I am uncomfortable with that heter. It does exist. I'm uncomfortable with that heter because there's a prima gaudium which discusses this issue in regards to goose fat. And from what my understanding of goose fat, it has the same thick consistency as mayonnaise. Who's ever seen goose fat? Right? Okay. So, I think you can actually get it in Shalom's if you want, right? So, and it discusses this issue of lisha in the first stage of the process. So the Prima Gaudium, which was written 250 years ago, already held it's a problem. So I hear the Svara, but I'm not comfortable relying on it. But there are many poskim which nowadays, which do rely on it. So, regards to the tuna salad, there's your question. You have a problem. According to Moshe, you have no way to get to the first stage of the process because the changing order will not permit it.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
If we make egg salad with sauteed onions in oil.
Okay, you're doing it with oil.
Putting the sauteed onions
second. I would put that first. Would that work?
See, the salad to the salad isn't the problem. The issue is the oil.
Oil,
right? So the oil to the onions doesn't really do anything. They
sit there. The onions are in the oil,
right? So if you put that in, so there, this is the famous Tzilamet Ayir Shaila. You know, how, why is it reliable with during Shabbos? You have to deal with peeling the eggs and Lisha, etc. So Tita Eliezer has a fascinating tshuva where he says, listen, Chai says we're making Tzilamet Ayir for the last, 300 years at least. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if Chai is not Nevi'im, they're B'nai Nevi'im, you can't, Mestama, they know what they're doing. Mestama, there's a heter. So he suggests that if you change the order over there, oil does not have the same consistency as mayonnaise. It makes it a little bit thinner type of mixture. Mm-hmm. So he would say if you change the order, that would be permitted. And then you do the next process, you have to do it with a crisscross motion. Okay. Great. Ladies, thank you very much.
Thank you.